Today's show, all hail Connecticut. What's Kentucky going to do as Cal jumps to Arkansas? The Caitlin Clark effect. And we've got guardrails or not. No guardrails. I don't know.
Time now for the College Basketball Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Leave your job every 8 years because you don't make any more friends there. You only make enemies. And it's probably true. I think we've been doing this podcast about that long, so Pat, you may have to go.
Ross Dellinger.
The whole block was out Saturday, Friday night watching that game. It was on all the TVs, and I just can't imagine that happening a few years ago. And then the talk, like in the bar, around the bar, about the foul call. Pretty remarkable weekend for the women's Final Four there in Cleveland.
And SI's Pat. 40.
This is not the way UCLA won championships. It's not the way Duke and North Carolina and Kentucky have won championships. Not even the way UConn used to win championships, but it is working at an incredible level.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. UConn Husky 75, Purdue 60. They feel like I wasted 3 weeks of my life. This was always going to be Huskies. UConn won by the largest point differential in the history of the NCAA basketball tournament, 140 total. Second place was Kentucky at 127 back in 96, was it?
Yes, it was 96. Yeah.
They've now won 12 consecutive NCAA tournament games by double digits. That's two titles in a row. Dan Hurley said we've been running college basketball for 25 or 30 years. Six titles in 25 years. All of the Blue Bloods, Champions, Classics. No. This is the program. Three different head coaches have won it there. Hurley's the best coach in college basketball. This program is kicking the living hell out of everybody. Pat, what happened again?
Well, you said the wasted the last 3 weeks of your life. I go back to January 28th when I watched them beat Xavier by 43. And right then and there, I said, well, that's the best team. Only they could mess it up, and UConn doesn't mess it up. That's the one thing about this team and last year's team. They don't crack. They don't blink. They don't have breakdowns. They don't throw the ball away. They don't miss open shots. They don't leave guys open. They do nothing wrong for any extended period of time. Like, they never have breakdowns. It's just incredible the consistency of their performances. And it does look like, you know, you're watching the same truck run over the same squirrel over and over and over again every time they play in a tournament. I mean, truly incredible. Dan Hurley absolutely at the top of his game, and UConn's going to be there for the foreseeable future as long as he's there. And we might get to one possible alternative to that here, but just a dazzling display. This was as good as probably any 2-year run that UCLA had back in the day. Maybe they might have had a little bit better. Of course, they won 88 straight games, but nobody else, I don't think. Like, Indiana 76, untouchable. Kentucky 96, untouchable. But they didn't go back-to-back. And to do that with a largely different cast of characters this time around, phenomenally impressive.
Well, that's one of the most impressive things, right, is like some of the many of the back-to-back champions had, you know, virtually the same team coming back the next year. And that's what's crazy. See, I think it's like five of the top eight, maybe, scores were lost last year. Obviously, several NBA players. And for them to come back, to do it for him to in the transfer portal age where there's so much player movement, for him to piece this thing together, to do it again with a fairly different team is pretty incredible. I don't know that what strikes me about them when you watch them play, And Dan, by the way, my bracket did really well because I had UConn going out in like the Sweet 16. So that worked out really well.
That's right. That Auburn thing didn't work out.
That Auburn thing didn't work out. But when I watch them play, it's just really smart, fast basketball, and like really unselfish. And late in the game, it really came through. And like one specific instance where they like, you know, raced down the court. Maybe I had a steal and raced down the court, and you know, put up a shot, got the offensive board, kicked it out. And this is 6 minutes left to go in the game with like a 15-point lead. Kicked it out, and they passed up the wide open three to waste about 15 seconds more on the shot clock. Dished it inside, layup. You know, so you wasted 15 seconds, and you got the two things like that. They just play so smooth. It's incredible.
They're half court sets. It's like every guy is either he's making cuts, he's rolling into a pick, he's getting open. I mean, there was a play today, and I forget exactly who it was. It looked like they could have thrown an alley-oop to two different guys on two different sides of the rim. It was like, which one you want? They just cut you to death. It's just incredible. And then defensively, it's like they're in a zone, then they're doubling off the ball, then they're fighting through. I mean, it's like every other possession, something different. They're so well coached. What Dan Hurley just did is incredible. Like you said, Ross, like, yeah, that Florida team brought everybody back. That Duke team in 91-92 brought everybody back, and forget about the Wooden era and all that. Nobody could leave. And I would say this about a kid who did come back. And this is what I like about this era. And I know that, you know, I'm not getting on a soapbox here, I promise, but the transfer portal is horrible. I love Tristan Newton's story.
Yeah.
I love this kid. He is a senior in high school at Burgess High School in El Paso, Texas. El Paso is one of the most, it's probably the most isolated city with whatever the population is, 600,000 plus in El Paso, like a sizable city. It might be the most isolated in the whole country. Apparently, no one scouted him except Joe Dooley at East Carolina. Credit to Joe Dooley. But this kid averaged 37.2 points a game, 9.2 rebounds, 2-point assists as a senior in high school. And he got recruited to East Carolina. It's crazy. Not his fault that everyone slept on him. It's not his fault that they all committed to kids that were juniors that were ranked and this and that. This Tristan was always a great player. He goes to East Carolina, plays, has a good, really good freshman year. Second year, you got the pandemic. Dooley, I think he left. He got fired. I don't know what happened with him, but Dooley's no longer the coach. He's not stuck at East Carolina. He goes to UConn, bang, back-to-back national championships, back-to-back most outstanding players. He's an absolutely great college basketball player, and he always should have been. And this is what I like, that kind of story. The kid just believed in himself. Yeah, if that kid is growing up in Chicago or New York or D.C., he's getting recruited at a high major level out. But he's from El Paso, so he isn't. And then he just proves himself, and he's sitting there. Yeah, man, I guess I won it again. Another, I mean, back-to-back most outstanding. How many of those are there? What's that, like Walton? Boy. Like
yeah, maybe
Alcindor? Like, I mean, I don't know. It's incredible. Yeah.
No, that's kind of, I mean, you look at that. You look at Cam Spencer, who was a vital part of the game tonight and a vital part of that team. 3 years at Loyola Maryland, 1 year at Rutgers, and then he goes to UConn and shoots 44% from three, 54% from two, 91% from the foul line, and plays with all that fire and energy that Danny Hurley demands from his team. And, you know, like the fact that you can get guys like that, first of all, like it's astounding that so many people miss on them. But then, yes, that UConn looks at him and says, yeah, that Loyola Maryland kid, let's get him. Yeah, the East Carolina kid, let's get him. And then you plug him in to this unbelievable machine and they do what they do. This is, I mean, This is extraordinary what they're doing, turning over rosters, bringing up recruits from or transfers from lower levels. This is not the way UCLA won championships. It's not the way Duke and North Carolina and Kentucky have won championships. Not even the way UConn used to win championships, but it is working at an incredible level.
Yeah, not much else you can say. They absolutely are dominating. Danny Hurley is crazy. His sideline, he's on court coaching.
He was on fire.
He's getting into it with every ref, every call. Every
got into it with Zach Edey.
Yeah.
Got into it with Edey.
He's a total lunatic. I'm telling you. I love him.
That happened about right in front of me, by the way. So, yeah, like Edey probably committed a moving screen, didn't get called, and then eventually there was, I think, a foul called on UConn or something. And so we go to a TV timeout, and Hurley, it's like immediately 12 steps out there to scream at the refs. And Edey is walking by as Hurley's screaming at the refs, and Edey, I believe, said something early or stared at him. I don't know which. And Hurley immediately barks back at him, says something, F you. That is Danny Hurley, straight out of Jersey City, New Jersey. He coaches that way. He's on the ragged edge. He'll take on anybody, anytime, if he feels like they've been threatened, disrespected, besmirched, whatever. I hope he can keep going because he burns so hot that you worry a little bit. How long can you coach this way? But for now, it's working spectacularly.
Well, he joked, I think, in the post game on TV, the TNT interview that he or TBS interview that he was going to hang it up. This is going to be it.
Yeah.
But then quickly came back and said, "No, I'm still coming." So.
Interesting bit too. He said the other day on Friday before the Final Four, he talked about NIL and coaching kids who are getting NIL money. He says, I'll say this. I personally coach hard. Geez, no kidding, coach. A little bit. I've coached these teams harder than I've coached any team just because of everything that these guys have at their disposal. The resource of the University of Connecticut and the programs now invest in these players is not for their attendance. It's not just to be on campus. It is to produce and to produce winning. The way we travel, you know, the residence, the full-time dining we have in our $40 million practice facility, the NIL opportunities. So he's meaner to them because they aren't just lowly college students who's getting
tuition. They're professional players.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they're professional players.
Yeah, he expects results from imagine that, right? Expects results from athletes who are basically paid a salary. There you go.
Pretty funny. So yeah, it's not. He's a player's coach in the oddball way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. No, he is. I mean, fiercely defensive of his players. You know, but does he? Oh my God, he rides him incredibly hard. I mean, it's he is wildly intense. And yeah, the press conferences on Sunday were great because you've got two very blunt, very comfortable in their own skin coaches who don't do things the way a lot of them do. They don't say everything just to avoid offending a potential recruit. You know, they are very confident they're going to get their own guy. They're going to get guys, and they're going to do it their way, and they're really not that concerned. So it was very refreshing hearing from them, that's for sure.
All right, Pat, you already alluded to it. We got called out for not doing an emergency pod. We were stuck on a little bit of a schedule here because the national title game, and we've got some staffing changes going on and things like that. So we're a little stuck, but John Calipari is left or is leaving. I don't know whether he signed the deal yet. The University of Kentucky after 15 seasons and heading to Arkansas, which opens up the Kentucky job, which has led Kentucky fans to think, hey, let's just go get let's go get Dan Hurley. We'll get to that. The Roman Empire has won one title in the time it took UConn six. So love you, Big Blue Nation, but it's a different world. But let's go to this. It is it was a big one. We talked about Calipari needing an off-ramp, and there wasn't one. He needed out of Kentucky. He was going to have to go into one more season where – the fan base was against them, a portion of it. Everyone was just going to sit around and wait to see if they could make a run in March, because anything less than a Final Four wasn't going to be good enough. I think all of that is fair. When you're coaching Kentucky, you can't be losing to Oakland and St. Peter's and having a 9-win season 1 year and not getting anything done. So all of this, I think, is fair. I think John Calipari would probably think it's fair. I think he understood and embraced that Kentucky job, and he was the perfect guy there for a long time, and then he wasn't. It's a hard place to last. But he needed an off-ramp. Arkansas was there. They got money. They care about basketball. They're going to give him the private jets and the NIL and all of that. Considering the options, I thought it was a pretty good deal for Cal. I get people were just stunned that anyone would jump from Kentucky to Arkansas. But he needed to go somewhere. I thought it was a pretty good deal. I think this could be win-win-win for everybody, Kentucky, Arkansas, and Calipari, but we'll see. Pat, your thoughts as a resident taxpayer of the Commonwealth of Kentucky?
It was a pragmatic move for John Calipari. It was also a repudiation of his vision of the program and his ability to execute that vision, because it stopped working a long time ago, 9 years ago. 2015 was the last Final Four. And since then, after they frankly blew a national championship with a stacked undefeated team, it's just been diminishing returns ever since. And for him to pull the ripcord says, I can't do it. I can't do it. I don't have the stomach for the fight. I don't have the plan. I'm out of here. Do I blame him necessarily? No, because Dan, as you pointed out, he needed to get out. And Kentucky fans wanted him to get out. So this is a, again, pragmatic move, but also underscores that, frankly, he had everything going his way and he blew it. He didn't adjust well enough to a changing times and changing game. He didn't coach well enough. He recruited plenty well enough, but he did not coach the players he got. He didn't build the rosters well enough. And it was time to go. And he might do well. You're right. This may turn out well for everybody involved. But when he's standing there calling the hogs tomorrow, Tuesday, when this comes out, in awkward fashion, just remember, that's not really something he wanted to be doing. It's what he has to do.
You guys remember when a few days after the season, when they were upset, and there was some question, obviously, if he'd continue as the coach, if Kentucky would pay the buyout, which was what, 30 million or something like
33.
That? 33 million. And him and Mitch Barnhart, the athletic director, met. And then the next day they did this video that aired. And it was kind of this kumbaya video of we're all in this together. And then poof. How often we see these things happen. Of course, I think in football terms, and the move reminded me of and many people have pointed to this, is Jimbo Fisher going from Florida State, having won a national title there and seen things dip, and then gotten hired in some big, massive contract by a program that in Texas A&M. I don't know if that's fair, but it certainly, you draw some similarities to it. You know, Jimbo, I felt at that time, you know, things were running out for him at Florida State. There are some other similarities there with the national championship and things kind of going sideways and the massive contract and all that. And the question, of course, is it going to end the same way for Jimbo? I'm sure, or for Cal, I'm sure Cal would take a $75 million check to go away and go move in your ranch.
It'll end with money. There's no one's getting poor here.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Pat.
No, it will end with money. Does it end with any more glory? Does he have a reclamation run left in him? That remains to be seen.
He's got to run the program different. He's got to coach different. He's got to do things different. There's no question. Pat said he's had the talent, but it hasn't worked lately. This isn't how these teams are built anymore. When you're sort of listing off how UConn got there, it wasn't, oh, they have one top 10 recruit. You know, it's not, oh, we just load up on McDonald's All-Americans and maybe get one transfer. It's like, no, we're getting guys from East Carolina and Maryland and this, and then we coach the hell out of them. And UConn's program is exponentially better than Kentucky's. Kentucky can't beat anybody in March. No one can even touch. You know, it's probably like a, what, about an 8-minute, 10-minute stretch. Alabama was as good the whole tournament. Yeah. That was it. So it's a totally different ball game. He's got to do things differently, without question. But he will bring a lot of excitement to Arkansas. He will bring players. They will win games. And I don't know what they're counting on at Arkansas. I don't have my finger on the fan base of Arkansas basketball, but this is a place where basketball matters. It started in the 70s with Eddie Sutton, who then became the Kentucky coach. This is the reversal. And Eddie Sutton made it clear the difference in pecking order back then by declaring, I would have crawled to Lexington for this job, right? And yep. I think people in Fayetteville were a little hurt by that back in the day. It's old school grudges. They got their revenge here, I guess.
Yeah, they showed them.
They showed them 45 years later. R.I.P. Eddie Sutton.
There were some jokes about that being a 45-year trade in the making. Yeah, as, the famous Bob Holt said, a coach to be named later, John Calipari.
Great line. It won a national title, Nolan Richardson, and were an incredible program. Mm. Almost won another one. Got upset by UCLA. And then they made a couple of Elite Eights recently with Musselman, who takes off for USC. Crazy. Usually the dominoes on these jobs start when Kentucky opens and then it filters all the way down. The domino here started when SMU fired Rob Lanier.
Yeah. It's one of the craziest domino things of all time.
Raise your hand if you knew SMU employed Rob Lanier as its coach, okay? Go ahead and raise your hand right now. SMU's going to the ACC. They fire Rob Lanier, and then they get Andy Enfield from USC, which gets Musselman to go to Arkansas. This thing went uphill. Somehow it defied gravity, and then Kentucky, Calipari goes to Arkansas.
Well, let's take it further, Dan.
And Dan Hurley's supposed to go. No, yeah.
Let's take it further. What if we said, does SMU fire its coach if it's not moving into the ACC next year? No. So then we go back on SMU joining the ACC, and why didn't, how did SMU join the ACC? Well, it's because the Pac-12 fell apart. It all goes back to the Pac-12, Dan.
They'd only taken that TV deal.
What we basically had, we had three coaches pull the ripcord on jobs they didn't want to be in or couldn't feel like they could win anymore. Andy Enfield, like, oh man, yeah, I just had it. a lottery pick point guard and LeBron James's son. We didn't do shit. I'm out of here. Musselman's been dying to get out after a really bad year there. He's out of there. And then Calipari, Jack Golke, shot John Calipari out of Lexington and sent him to Fayetteville.
What a weird domino that one was. Yeah. The solar eclipse of dominoes backwards. Everything's backwards. Yeah. Jack Golke somehow involved. So here we are. I don't know, but like Calipari brings like, the problem he had, one of his problems in Kentucky is he stayed too long. I put this in my column about this. Billy Tubbs, the Oklahoma coach, he said his regret was staying at Oklahoma too long. He says you need to leave your job every 8 years because you don't make any more friends there. You only make enemies. And it's probably true. I think we've been doing this podcast about that long. So, Pat, you may have to go. So Cal comes in. He's got his whole act. He's got the say. Everyone else rolls their eyes. Everyone else groans. Oh my God, no! All right, but if he's your coach, you get all fired up for it. And when he says stuff you don't quite like, if we have four lottery picks, it's the greatest night in the history of Kentucky basketball or something, whatever he had. And you go, really? Like, nah. But you go, well, that's going to help in recruiting. Like, you buy right? The Kentucky fans were. And he does stuff like raises funds. Like, if there's a flood, like the next night he's running a telethon somehow. Like the guy is all in as your coach. And so it works for a while if you're winning, which it usually does. But then they stopped winning. And then when he's sitting there going, hey, man, we got three more McDonald's All-Americans. Like, I already heard this story. It didn't work.
Mm. Right.
But you go to Arkansas and say, hey, we got three McDonald's All-Americans coming in. And they're like, hey, here we go. Right. It's the new act. His stuff's fresh. Yep. New material.
Yep. Yeah.
So
yeah, it's a start over. Right. They call it the what is it? The your clock restarts, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
So if they're winning and they got he gets these guys to come with them and they're dunking and let's go and we're contending in the SEC and yeah, maybe we only make an Elite Eight. That's a pretty good deal for Arkansas. At Kentucky, sure. It's like, where's our damn title? And they got the right to say, where's our damn title? You won us one in a long time.
No, sure they do. Because that Cal basically sold them on the belief that he had changed the game. That he had cornered the market on how to win after that title in 12. And then they go back to the championship game in 14. And they go make Final Four in 15. And then it was like, and then guess what? He didn't. And so that it all came up empty. And yes, it was the same lines. It was the same spin. It was the same huckster. And you do need a new audience if that's the deal after a while. And so now he's got a new audience. In terms of length of time in a job like that, yes, I've always said Notre Dame football, Kentucky basketball, a lot in common there. Those jobs will burn you out and eat you up. And trying to do it for 15 years is a long time. I mean, since Adolph Rupp, nobody's come close, I don't think, to going that long. And Pitino went 89 to 97. Tubby went 98 to 2007, so you're talking 8-9 years in there.
And they were ready to run him off, yeah. And
then, oh, yeah, Tubby, yeah. Tubby absolutely just left just to get away. So those things, yes, you run the risk of, A, just wearing out your welcome, and B, wearing yourself out in jobs with that magnitude of attention and demand.
So we'll see. Could be good for Cal and Arkansas. Like, they could do pretty well. I don't expect him to lose. He doesn't lose. I mean, even this year, it was a bad NCAA tournament, but he had a D2 transfer hit 10 threes on him. You know? But they still won a ton of games, had some impressive victories and stuff. Like, it'll be exciting at Arkansas for a little, you know, I think that'll work. But how about Kentucky? What do they do? If Cal and Mitch Barnhart were not best friends, I think that's quite a secret. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to stick it to him a little bit. Well, the one thing he did do is he jumped late in the carousel. The easiest thing for Kentucky to have happen was Cal return, Billy Donovan get fired by the Bulls some point, and he's just sitting there everybody's sitting there going, all right, I want the Kentucky job. Now, you know, you see Nate Oates. He's already got a contract extension. He's immediately out. You know, some of these guys are going to immediately out. So it's not as easy to just grab the coach you want. I also think two things. One, I think the importance of being a blue blood is not as much less than when Eddie Sutton was crawling there.
Right.
We talked about this. These other teams are winning. You got NIL in the transfer portal, and you coach different. You build rosters different. You don't need to sign all these guys out of high school. You could find some kid who nobody wanted out of El Paso, ends up being the most outstanding player, not a five-star recruit twice. I don't think Kentucky has incredible backing and resources and all of that, all of that. But I don't know that that matters as much. And then finally, following him isn't that easy either, because these fans are kind of been accustomed to having like 2-3 first round draft picks on their team. And that isn't easy to duplicate either. Just because he did it every year doesn't mean that you just snap your fingers and get those recruits. So it's a little bit tricky for him, the timing, following him and all that. But Pat, your thoughts on where the Kentucky program is, and then who do you think they can get?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's still obviously a phenomenal job, but it's not. There are a lot more jobs you can succeed at now, and a lot more coaches, I think, that financially have the wherewithal to say no if they don't feel like they could handle that sort of fishbowl existence. You know, if you're making $4 million and Kentucky's going to offer you $7 million, but you don't feel like that's going to be a very comfortable place for you, well, you can live up pretty well on $4 million, like for life. So that is a little bit of a complication. You know, the Billy Donovan piece is really interesting. He said no to Barnhart in 2007 when he was coming off the second national championship at Florida, and he stayed there, and they did pursue him and Rick Barnes before making the immortal Billy Gillespie hire. You know, this could be the kind of thing. Scott Drew at Baylor is kind of a Mitch Barnhart sort of guy, I think. He listened to Louisville. If you're going to listen to Louisville, you'll probably listen to Kentucky. Does he really want to go? I don't know. He's one of those guys has made a lot of money in a very comfortable place. His family likes Waco. He could be the coach forever there. Nobody's going to be, you know, breathing down his neck to win titles necessarily. They care more about football still there. The SEC potential wheel here is just fascinating because Oates, yes, has pulled his name out, but Bruce Pearl, I could see him being interested. I don't know whether Mitch Barnhart's going to hire Bruce Pearl. Beard, same thing. I don't know whether Mitch Barnhart's going to hire him. But if they did, if you hire one of them, and then all these other, you know, Cal goes to Arkansas, Pearl goes to Kentucky, Beard goes to Auburn, Will Wade goes to Ole Miss, just, you know, blow the whole thing
Look
up.
Look at Why you. Not? Those wheels are turning.
We had a lot to talk about last night amongst the basketball writers here. We were kind of theorizing all that.
A Jenga, yeah. It was a Jenga. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Tetris, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The pieces.
Yeah. So, I mean, they'll have good options, but there's not a slam dunk. For one thing, Cal's coattails have historically been lousy in terms of producing assistant coaches who go on to become big-time successes. So he didn't leave anybody that's you're like, oh, yeah, there's the successor. And then, again, it's just the timing of this and who's going to be available and who wants to jump. Very unclear at this point.
Can we talk about the chicken man at Arkansas? Right, Tyson.
John Tyson.
Tyson Chicken. You know, he's pretty close to Cal and was, I guess, financially probably part of this situation, including NIL. I find it really interesting in this era we're seeing more and more of this is you know, NIL is built into coaches' contracts. And we've seen it in some football contracts. We certainly going to be seeing it more and more, I think, in basketball contracts. And, you know, one of the things to come out with all the reporting the last day or so has been a promise from Arkansas for enhanced and increased NIL for John Calipari. I'm sure there's some promise.
5 million, yeah.
Yeah, five plus million, yeah. And I think you'll, you know, Nate Oates released his statement saying that he's, you know, committed and will stay at Alabama. And not long after, Alabama's athletic director, Greg Byrne, sent out a statement related to NIL and NIL fundraising for the program. It's you know, it's a bidding war out there, and not every time does the highest dollar win, but it's significant in the recruiting game, and that's been a kind of an interesting part of all this is not just coaches leaving to go to a place that, you know, commits a certain NIL dollar amount, but coaches maybe like Nate not going to a place and potentially getting more for his team. We always talk about coaches, head coaches getting more for their staffs, right? And now we're starting to talk about head coaches maybe getting more NIL for their teams.
Isn't this just what they talk about out loud? They couldn't talk about it before. I mean, what was what was a
Blue Are you
blood.
Suggesting there was cheating, Dan?
Yeah, SEC. I mean, I'll tell you a story about a basketball recruit in the SEC. Went to his state school. He grew up in a small town in the state. And he later realized why he went to the school, why his mom and everyone around him. And it was the principal at the school went to that state school. And the guy at the bank who had this mom's mortgage and didn't collect for a few years. Went to the state school, and the police chief, when his brother got in some trouble, went to the state school, was a fan of the state school. Like, it's institutionalized for decades.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is blue blood? Oh, they got fans. They got support. I mean, this is SEC basketball recruiting. As long as I've been covering this sport, they've been buying players in the SEC and everywhere else, but particularly in the SEC.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's like, now that, well, we're committed. Now, like, of course, you're always committed.
Yeah.
This is nothing new. It's great. Now we can talk about it out loud. I like that. You don't get blackmailed or there's a trick played on you because your mom doesn't have to pay the mortgage because it's a banker deal. Now you can be like a little bit more open about it. Your family isn't blackmailed on this stuff. We talked about the lights don't go off just because all of a sudden you took a visit somewhere else. I mean, it's all the same. It's a new name for the same stuff. Well, it just always has been.
I think you're right on that. I think that's it used to be called commitment.
Alignment, commitment.
I'm sure these days, like, and this is the case at least with football, I feel like when you talk to people in the industry, is the amounts are higher, a lot more.
Yeah,
it's like more significant what we're talking about. We're talking about $5 million for a basketball team. I mean, there's 15 players on a basketball team. You can do the math, right? 300,000 to 400,000 on average each. So we're talking about some pretty significant the money. I think the numbers and the figures have gone up. And yeah, of course, you can be a little more public about it now. And guess what? Within the next year or two, we won't be calling it NIL. It'll be something else, and it'll be more in more of a framework of some sort.
Coaches always knew what schools had money.
That's quote from Matt Painter Sunday. What is tough is name, image, and likeness wasn't supposed to be put in place for whoever's got the most money to get the best players. But if you want to be kind of truthful about what's going on, that part of our business that stinks, that was what's happening before. That was basically the way it was always happening. He said it. Said it out loud.
No one could possibly deny it.
No.
It's always been the case. So they just called it something different. And coaches coming up in the system knew which schools had money and all that. So I think it's great. Arkansas, the Chicken Man, Tyson Chicken, big fan, good product, quality product. Fan of the Tyson Chicken.
You might get some wings going on there at Augusta, right?
Whatever. Yeah, who knows? Yeah. We got a little barbecue out here. We'll cook some chicken, I'm sure. So great for them. And you got $5 million or whatever, but like, that's good. I don't think the John Calipari's problem was he wasn't able to get players one way or the other. You know, it was like he had the talent. So one last thing. So because we teased it, Pat, chances Danny Hurley is the next coach in Kentucky.
I just don't think so. I like Mitch Barnhart would be committing malpractice if he doesn't inquire. He has to. You're Kentucky. You should go after the best coach. Danny Hurley is the best coach. So you call him and you check. And Dan Hurley's in a spot where he could probably drive a bargain if he wants to with UConn. Maybe not as much for himself as for NIL.
Ah, yes.
Things like that, you know. They do have good facilities there, and they have access to players. And Dan Hurley is a Northeast guy. Like, it seems like a perfect fit. Rick Pitino was a Northeast guy. He fit pretty well at Kentucky. Hurley has the kind of personality, you know, I think he'd be fine with the spotlight. He just has to make sure he doesn't spontaneously combust at some point in time on the sideline. I would not see it happening, but I also think that it would be very irresponsible of Mitch Barnhart to not at least ask.
I found it interesting in Dan Hurley, one of his comments, again, in the post game, right after on the TV interview, he said, UConn is a special place this time of year. They give us all the resources we need to do well or do what we need to do, which I don't know, a little subtle there.
Connecticut's a very wealthy state. They're not lacking for money in the state of Connecticut. They may not have all gone to Connecticut. That's the difference. This is not a poor state. Obviously, you don't have the SEC TV money and all that, but I cannot fathom why Dan Hurley would take the Kentucky job. And I understand how great the Kentucky job is, but it would be absolutely ridiculous if he took the job. I wouldn't get it at all. It'd just be like, okay, like why? You just won two national titles in a row. What else do you need?
Yeah.
And we need some money. Well, you know, get yourself down to Stanford and Greenwich. Fairfield and Greenwich. They don't have any of those in Kentucky. They got some money. They got some coal. Hey, we got this guy. He's a bourbon. Drive around down there in Greenwich. Yep. Okay. It's a whole different world. This is where the hedge fund guys live. I mean, this is it. So maybe you get one of them to give you some money. I cannot see Danny Hurley going. I would be disappointed that he left. He needs to stay and keep winning at Connecticut. But there's nothing. I just don't think in this era it matters as much. And you can't be better than Kentucky. They won six titles in 25 years.
That just in from. This is 12:53 a.m. Eastern time when we're taping this after the championship game. But Hurley, I think, apparently told Pete Thamel about the Kentucky opening. I don't think that's a concern. He joked that reporters should ask his wife about the Kentucky job and see what she says. Andrea Hurley might have an opinion there.
Yeah. Dang, I don't know. I guess you could make more money, but yeah, not going to do it. All right. We will be back after this break. All right, women's basketball, South Carolina, perfect season. Dawn Staley, best dressed coach in college basketball. Now that Jay Wright is not, it'd be a match.
It's a Philly thing.
I mean, it's not Kim Mulkey's outfits, but it's no. I mean, she's out there doing her thing. Great, unbelievable season for South Carolina. They replaced a whole bunch of people too. They had a whole new kind of team, or a lot of them. Caitlin Clark, the game against UConn was astounding. She had an incredible first quarter against South Carolina, but they just ran out of steam against a tremendous team. I think we've discussed a lot of this. I guess the question is, you know, the TV ratings, the phenomenon for Caitlin Clark was amazing. It was 14 million on Friday, 18 million something on Sunday. I think the stat was, someone asked me this, it was the highest rated ESPN non-football ESPN show, the second highest, and the only thing that beat it was a World Cup soccer game, USA Portugal.
Wow.
So you're talking about some monstrous stuff. So the question is, ratings were massive. Caitlin Clark's going to WNBA, where I feel like she's under a lot of pressure to, everyone's talking about her elevating it like Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. Oh, good God. good luck. You know, WNBA never gets a million viewers. We'll see. I think it'll be a big sensation to when she starts with Indiana, but we'll go to there. But what about the college game? And I guess compared to the, you know, people are watching women's college basketball. Will there be growth off of this season for everyone post Caitlin Clark? Pat, what do you think about that? And I guess her WNBA chances.
Yeah, crucial question that is just going to have to be TBD. We have to see it to know for sure. I suspect that there will be a little bit of a jet stream effect of pulling people in that didn't pay that much attention before and now said, hey, this is a very fun product. I want to check it out, and I want to see Juju Watkins at USC, and want to see when is South Carolina ever going to lose a game again and things like that. So there will continue to be personalities. There will continue to be storylines. And I think they will definitely have higher ratings. How much higher? I don't know. You know, it's just, I don't know whether you're getting these kind of ratings again. Anything, maybe not even close.
There's
to
nowhere.
It, but
no, they could grow some from the pre Caitlin Clark era.
Right.
Like that's
right. Yes. Yeah, that's about that. That's the expectation and should happen. But you're not going to just be sitting there seeing 18 million over and over and over. I don't believe. And WNBA, yeah, I don't know that. To me, I think the college game, especially just where it is on the calendar, is a something that people naturally gravitate to. February, March, And then they move on to other stuff. And WNBA is not played at that time. It's a different point in the calendar where there's other competition from pro sports. So it's going to, I think it'd be a little bit tougher sell there, but you know, phenomenal. I mean, it was great to watch. It was really fun. Just, you know, when somebody shoots the way she shoots, it is great TV. It's great basketball. It's just pretty and exciting. And then you run up against South Carolina women are a lot like the UConn men, where you can hang around them for a while. You play your ass off. You're in the game. And then all of a sudden, guess what? They're going to punch you in the face and it's over. And somewhere in the second half. So what South Carolina's done is damn impressive, too, as long with what UConn has done, men.
Yeah, what Dawn Stanley's built there is pretty incredible. And, man, the South Carolina team is, like, huge, right? Like, there's in the trees down there. It was a fun game to watch. It was a fun Final Four. Of course, you had the big controversial call and even before we got to the championship game with UConn and in Iowa. I think it was the right call, but it was one of those weird, you know, tough timing of the call. But everybody, I remember, you know, the next day I went back home this past weekend down on the Gulf Coast and the whole block was out Friday night watching that game. It was on all the TVs. And I just can't imagine that happening a few years ago. And then the talk, like in the bar, around the bar, about the foul call, you know. It was pretty remarkable weekend for the women's Final Four there in Cleveland. And yeah, you do have to wonder, like, what percentage of the viewers were there to see, right, the best women's basketball player we've seen in a while. And I don't know. I wonder what the carryover will be going forward, because, you know, like Angel Reese also, like a lot of those stories and those stars move on.
I mean, I think it like introduces people to like, okay, this is Dawn Staley. You know, maybe they weren't, oh, this is Dawn Staley. Oh, she's cool. I like that program. Or, you know, reminding of UConn or stuff like that. I just think this is a singular sensation. You know, I cover a lot of sports. I'm at the Masters now, and the Masters is not what it was when Tiger was rolling.
Right.
It just wasn't. NASCAR doesn't have the personalities. The UFC doesn't have the personalities right now that UFC 300 this weekend is, everyone, you know, fight fans are really excited, but you know, it doesn't have the superstars. And sometimes it just comes and goes. And I think it introduced a lot of people to women's college basketball. I think as for the WNBA, I don't know. I mean, you can't discount the brands that first the NCAA tournament has, the beauty of this event, and then just the brand power of Iowa Hawkeye basketball is way bigger than the Las Vegas Aces. You know, it just is like,
yeah,
I mean, entire state rallies around,
right?
This.
There's a dedicated audience to Iowa athletics.
Yes.
Whereas Las Vegas, they have the Raiders and the Golden Knights. And do they, you know, how much do they pay attention to the Las Vegas Aces?
Yeah. And maybe it's like, oh yeah, we like, it's not this thing where you got everybody going, oh, you see our women's basketball team are lately, you know, everyone and UConn and South Carolina and these people, the coaches are super famous. Ariema and Dawn Staley and stuff like that, and Mulkey, and just all over. And the college brand is so powerful. And that's why people would say, hey, you should stay in college. You're not getting this audience. I'm fascinated by this kind of like, she is not walking into the WNBA, and good for the WNBA players. They don't have to kiss her ring. But, you know, you hear Taurasi, well, you know, you're going to deal with some professionals now. And
yeah,
there's definitely some blowback, and like they're coming after mm-hmm. Caitlin Clark.
Sure.
And it's a different game. It's a different, like I said, different brand. Pro sports is just different. You don't get these stories of like, you know, that Iowa team, the more you watched them, who's the one? Gabby Marshall. Never shot, barely ever shot, just plays defense. right? She came kind of famous because her games, like she had like three shots in the Final Four or something like that. Like she doesn't shoot, just defense, right? And it's kind of like this endearing story of like, well, she's not that big and she's probably not that great, but she does this really well. But you can't do that in the pros. You right. don't have like just that kind of, not to the same degree, or it's harder to learn that. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting to watch how that WNBA career, but there is not like a, hey, let's roll out the welcome mat. Hey, Caitlin Clark, we're so glad you're here. There's definitely some, I don't know if it's resentment or whatever, but it's definitely some, we'll see. And yeah. I wonder how that plays out.
And yeah, I mean, look, you'll be going up against grown women and they've been able to watch and probably pick apart a game saying, yeah, does she really guard anybody? Does she rebound? You know, they'll find out. Because whatever chinks in the armor may be there, they will attack. So, I have two hot takes, if you will, from the men's and women's Final Fours. First one, I hated that moving screen call in real time. I mean, I really hated it. Upon review after review after review, it was a moving screen. I still don't love it because there are a lot of moving screens in basketball
all moving
that don't
screens.
Get called. Yeah.
Find me a non-moving screen.
Right. So that call at that time,
it's a foul. Yeah. It's a foul, but they're all fouls.
Yeah. Yeah.
That wasn't very hot. That's not a hot take.
Okay. Well, how about this one? All right. How about this one? Zach Edey should have been the mop from the men's.
Here I tell this heartwarming story of the kid from El Paso. Nobody paid attention to it.
Kid from El Paso, great story. Was not the most outstanding player of the Final Four.
Zach Edey was. Yeah.
It is amazing that he put up what he put up. You know, best player right on that team has the best game and still not only loses, but loses by 15. So
yeah.
Probably That's, speaks to how remarkable that UConn is.
I mean, I think Purdue fans, if you had said Edey's going to get 37 and 10, they'll say, hey, we're going to have a chance. And they really didn't have a chance. No. So it's his two Final Four games, 57 points, 22 rebounds, four block shots. Outstanding performance by him.
That one's better. Better work there, Pat. Good job.
Thank you.
All right. Any more thoughts? We're getting back to football.
That's fine.
Yeah, let me break up this basketball talk with some not just football, Dan, but D1 Council legislative proposals. How does that sound? Lots of fun, right?
At 1:06 a.m. sounds like we can keep it tight here.
Be brief.
I'll be real brief.
I'm going to pour myself another.
I was about
Jameson.
To say. Yeah, I was going to say, you probably need to top off that bourbon there, whatever you got there in that glass, buddy. I'll be real quick.
Am I allowed to show this on the air, or am I going to give a product placement? Uncle Jimmy's going to take me through this story. Go ahead there, Ross. Go ahead.
It's about your two favorite things, too, NIL and the transfer portal. So D1 Council meets in about a week and a half or so, and they'll be reviewing and likely adopting two proposals. One basically keeps the status quo that we currently have for transfers, which is players can transfer an unlimited amount of time. And they're just making that an NCAA rule. Right now, it's part of the preliminary injunction.
Why are they doing this? Everyone hates this. Is it just because they know they're going to lose?
Yeah, it seems like they are not going to fight this situation.
They screwed that up.
So they're basically all athletes will be able to transfer an unlimited amount of time as long as they meet certain academic requirements. The three academic requirements are you must leave your current school in good academic standing.
Reading, writing, and arithmetic. Those are the three.
You must
nobody
join.
Nobody is ineligible.
Nobody. I mean
very early. Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead. I don't want
to go ahead.
You must have degree percentage, a certain amount of your degree completed at your new school as well. So that's kind of the transfer portal piece. The other piece the D1 Council will be again reviewing and likely adopting is the NIL piece, which we had a story about last week. just basically allow, permit schools to be more hands-on, even more hands-on than they've been legally with third parties. And that includes collectives, but also includes multimedia rights holders like Playfly and Learfield. You know, the MMRs are getting a little bit, you might say, into the NIL game. And I think this gives schools the opportunity to be hands-on. It's another step in the direction of schools bringing, right, NIL in-house and paying athletes directly through NIL or some sort of compensation.
So, Ross, what you're telling me is the Division I Council, right? This is an important group of people.
Yep.
Okay, they are now embracing no guardrails.
It would seem that way. Very little guardrails, Dan.
Guess where it's headed. Yeah.
So it sounds like they listened to the pod.
No, they didn't. They wasted 5 years and gazillion dollars.
Just recently, they started listening.
No guardrails. Oh, they listened. They just did. They heard. They didn't listen. It's like a parent talking to their child. Yeah. No guardrails all of a sudden, huh? What's up, fellas?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Sure. Amazing. Hey, these rules, we'll never be able to enforce them. Gee, where'd you hear that? No guardrails. Let's go. The wild, wild west. The rich will get richer. John Calipari said, hell, I'm out of here. It's the richest damn place I've ever been, and I'm out. I'm leaving. I'm going with the chicken people. Are you proud of me, Ross? Are you proud of me?
Yeah, real proud. Yeah, I'm glad I got you on the soap, the Jameson-fueled soapbox.
Just teed him right up. Teed him right up.
Got me fired up. I was ready to just go to bed calmly, peacefully.
Yeah. Charlie Baker came into the media workroom before the game tonight and did talk a little bit, and he's still in favor of at least one kind of a guardrail, Dan. Said that he still would be in favor of a database of NIL deals.
That's not a guardrail. So, that's cost control.
I'm sorry. I know we don't agree on this, but I see his point in terms of giving players at least some sort of a scale of like, okay, this is what you could get, as opposed to going in blind and people maybe telling you the truth or maybe not.
Well, and I think that's on the way, right? The three things they approved.
It's
going to
drive their costs up.
The problem is you need athletes to disclose their deals to schools,
which is, by the way,
part of the D1 council that they're looking at, this NIL concept to allow schools to facilitate deals with third parties, with their own athletes, with third parties, is schools can only facilitate those deals if for the athletes who have disclosed their deals to the school. So they're trying to incentivize athletes to disclose their deals so they can come up with a more accurate
database. Only guardrail is to protect their costs. That's the only guardrail.
They just want to know the truth, Dan. A lot of numbers out there.
I'm in favor of the truth, by golly. Let's find out.
Hey, man, if a kid can con a school into overpaying for him, I say, God bless America.
Oh, there you go. Capitalism. Well, there are three things coming. We're going to have a database. We're going to have this database. Mm-hmm. Where disclosures, maybe, yeah. And agent registry, where agents have to go through maybe some kind of process or whatnot. And the third is some kind of educational component. These are the athlete protections that are coming.
Yeah.
That's what they're calling it, Dan. Don't look at me like that.
Charlie did. I you know, it was pretty good. We didn't get him for very long. He did have one line I enjoyed there. Somebody started a question, was like, you know, the ratings of the women's game, and he kind of cut him off and said, pretty, pretty, pretty good. A nice homage to Larry David, who had his last show. But, you know, there was some discussion there about whether or not, you know, maybe they jumped the gun on not bidding out the women's stuff, especially seeing the explosion that they could have maybe cashed in on there. But that's water under the bridge at this point.
Yeah, again, TV. People know that was Caitlin Clark, right? You know, right? Like, you're not going to get World Cup soccer game ratings in the future. Just not. I mean, just, again, no, no, just how it works. Anyway, that is our show. Guardrails or no. Congratulations, University of Connecticut Huskies. Utter dominance. We'll be back, not sure, Wednesday, Thursday, some point, back to the College Football Inquirer, and we'll be talking football as we get going, or all college sports. We'll see what else. We'll see who Kentucky hires. Anyway, continue to listen. Share us on social media. We will talk to you later.